Congratulations, you. You're listening to a Radio 191 FM podcast. Yes, you are.
Here on the program, we have Dr. Elizabeth Cook coming to us live, coming to talk about her new book, Unsettled Bliss, Whiteness in Aotearoa. Very excited for this chat. Good morning to you, Elizabeth. How are you?
Good morning, Zach. Very well, thank you.
Good.
Getting up.
Where are you coming to us from?
Christchurch. I'm originally from Whangarei, but I've lived most of my life now in Christchurch.
Mm-hmm. How are things ticking over in Christchurch? I hear it's like much nicer than it was, say, 4 or 5 years ago.
Nicer?
Yeah.
Well, people get lost because, you know, familiar landmarks are gone and replaced by new landmarks.
Yeah. I've heard in the centre city, at least, there's a bit more going on.
Yeah, although you can't compare it, I reckon, to Dunedin and Wellington.
Mm.
I think there's a real vibe in the centre of the cities there.
Mm.
And I'm not too sure. It's hard when you're actually in the midst of it all.
Yeah.
And to see, and it's been quite slow, the progress. So, yeah, it's hard to ask people who are here sometimes. I think it's better if you're a visitor and, you know, and you've got a comment because you came back.
You get a fresh perspective. You're not stuck in it, I guess you could say. Now, I read in an interview with you that often you have an anti-climax when finishing a project, and you don't tend to celebrate all that often. You tend to lay low. Why is that? What is the urge to chill out rather than go big?
Well, my background is in theatre and music, and they're both ephemeral. You know, you don't have a material product. Well, if you record, you do, but which I do.
Mm-hmm.
But there's that sense of the process is really the thing, and then when it's finished, it's finished.
Mm.
And it's kind of having to say goodbye to it, and that's sad because there's an exhilaration in being on stage performing. And a gig or a theatre piece is when it's happening, and then when it's happened, it's in the past. And so
kind of a come down, really.
Yeah. It's a real anticlimax, and it was the same with this book. Like when I got it published, I think I love the process of thinking and writing, but I'm really pleased. Now, since I've had my book launch last week at Scorpio Books, I'm really pleased now that people are reading it, and so things have sort of upped.
There's a come up. Yeah. Maybe you do a post-release celebration, you know.
Yes.
Next week, go out for a nice meal or something. Yeah.
Yeah, or the champagne, you know.
Or the bubbles. Yeah, a bit of quartz reef. Yeah, no, I feel a similar thing in a way, because when I finished my degree, it's just a bachelor's degree, but the last assignment I ever handed in, it was a weird sort of abstract, jarring feeling. It's like, oh, there's so much work that's gone into this big collective thing that I just can't even really process it right now. I need to just chill out for a second, you know? Yeah, it's bizarre.
Yeah, I had that over and over again because, of course, I started in midlife on a degree. And then I just kept going with honours and masters and PhD.
Now you're a doctor. Yeah. That's awesome. In the intro, you talk about why you started this book. And I want to touch on one specific thing you mentioned, which is you mentioned some activism. I think it was either in the 80s or the 70s. You mentioned you attended some Springbok protests, and you also mentioned that there was a disconnect between recognizing the racism internationally in South Africa and recognizing the racism at home. And that's been something that many Māori have pointed out. And that's the thing that a lot of Pākehā have done. Where do you think that disconnect comes from?
Being a settler culture. So we are in common with Australia, Canada, the States, South Africa. We're settler cultures, and we need to recognise that. We need to recognise our tūpuna. We need to recognise where our ancestors came from, or ourselves, because I consider who are called immigrants, I consider them new settlers in countries such as ours. So we're all new settlers or old settlers. We belong to a settler culture, and that settler culture, if it refuses to recognize whose land it came to, there is an unsettledness, and there's also a lack of identifiable culture, which is, you know, what is the culture here? It is Maori culture, and my culture is derived from Englishness, Irishness, and Welshness, but the Englishness dominated my ancestry. So my habits, my cultural, social, culinary habits are based around an English idea of culture. And I think a lot of people don't understand that. They have cut themselves off. They have an amnesia about their past, and therefore they also have an amnesia about the history of Aotearoa. And it's very violent, the history of Aotearoa, as it is in Canada, as it is in Australia, USA, and South Africa. And I'm only speaking of the English-speaking ones, the settler cultures, because, of course, just about every Western European country has a settler culture somewhere in the world, with their language as the dominant language. And, of course, we've seen that unrest in New Caledonia with the settler culture there. And, So your question was again?
I think you've answered it very well.
Oh, good.
Yeah. No, I think you've done an excellent job. And I think that that kind of cultural amnesia, or that refusal to even begin to understand where you come from as a Pākehā person, is also just such a tragedy, right? Because you have inherited such a rich tradition. I mean, obviously those countries in Europe have a lot to blame for, but there's also a lot of positives there.
And you can draw from
so much cool shit. And it's just good to know where you come from as well. My dad always kind of hammered it into me that I should know my family history. So I've got some Polish, some Scottish, a little bit of Irish, but a lot of Slavic blood, and German and Dutch as well. Yeah,
and you've got the Burr too with the R, and I think people should be really proud of that, because New Zealand. When I was at uni, there was a person doing a linguistics research on a population in Darfield, just out of Christchurch, and Darfield. A population can be established for about 120 years, and then it starts developing its own dialect and special vocabulary. So I think New Zealand doesn't really understand and celebrate that too, that we are developing localities. And part of that problem was economic things that happened, where we have really trashed local developments. We're now getting them now with craft beers and craft cheeses, but you know, every part of New Zealand once had its own dairy factory, and just out of where I grew up in Maunu in Whangarei, there was a dairy factory at Maunga Tapiri. Everyone there calls it Maunga Tapiri, but it's Maunga Tapiri. and you know, they were developing their own cheddar cheeses, and that would have been just wonderful if it had continued. But it was that economic it's a nihilistic sort of attitude and overwhelming focus on export. And the development of things like Fonterra, that really destroyed those sort of things. And for me, that was quite a disappointment, you know, looking back at our history. Yeah,
that was what part of the... I'm assuming that Fonterra was assembled in the 80s because we became a globalised market.
For worse.
I think in a lot of ways.
In a lot of ways.
It was very unfortunate. I don't know where I was going to go with that, but we can leave the cheese. We can leave the cheese chat for now. But in the intro, you touch
on Whitestone. I love Whitestone.
Whitestone is great. Whitestone's awesome.
I don't get Kapiti anymore because they were taken over by Fonterra. So I have these like values, you know, principles, you know.
Yeah, buy local when you can. When you can, like always try. I totally agree. In the intro, you touch on how as a child you weren't taught anything about New Zealand, and there's no learning about being in a New Zealand context. Now, yesterday I mentioned that commercial radio wouldn't play Poye or Don't Dream It's Over by Crowded House when they originally came out. You know, what about this kind of settler culture leads to there being a massive confidence problem in New Zealand to not really understand the place we live, you know? Is that just the settler culture looking at everything in a sort of economic lens?
Well, it's tied up with an ideology, and the ideology underpins settler cultures. It's whiteness and it's white supremacy. Mm. And a lot of people, they balk at the term white supremacy. They don't understand that it's a system that was established just like capitalism is a system.
Yeah.
And I always say to people, I participate in a capitalist system that I don't agree with. There are many economic structures within any particular thinking that can be adopted. And at the moment, we live in a structure, a capitalist structure that serves the wealthy. Mm. It doesn't serve the people. And decisions are being made around, as we can see with this present government, decisions are made around dollars. They're not made around what's best for the people.
Yeah.
And the anti-Indigenous thing, which is prevalent in all settler countries, until they recognise it and allow self-government, is about getting rid of attachment to the land, because the land is supposed to be for foreign investment and wealthy investment to the highest bidder.
Yeah.
And it's so Indigenous people get in the way of that.
They do.
Yeah. And we get in the way of that. Activism gets in the way of that.
Mm.
And that whiteness, that white supremacy, it has real roots, which I talk about in my book, which started back in the Greek times, but, you know, with who's better than who. But it's, and we often hear these conversations about civilization, you know, and they get really. I always, my antenna go up when I hear people talking about a civilization, because, you know, brutality, the brutalities of World One and Two were by civilized people, people considered highly civilized.
Yeah.
And
Cold War. I
mean. So cruelty and is prevalent. It doesn't matter who you are, whether you think you are a civilized person and someone else belongs to a so-called savage culture.
Yeah.
The savageness that you talk about is present in all cultures if you allow it to be.
Yeah.
And we're looking at that now in the Ukraine and Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And so this whiteness, it was developed, you know, at the time that settlers were coming to New Zealand, there was the Great Chain of Being. And the Great Chain of Being put English people, because the British Empire was the most, they were the best people in the world.
Yeah.
And they looked down on the French and the Germans and the whoever. They allowed some of them to come in. Yes, they allowed some of them to come into New Zealand. You know, like when we couldn't get good British stock, we turned to the Dutch in the 50s and we allowed them to come in, even though they were Catholic and we were anti-Catholic, because Scots and English dominated the immigration policies of Aotearoa.
Yeah.
So that great J&B put English at the top, well, underneath, you know, underneath God and the angels and English.
Yeah.
And it was, of course, men and then women.
Yeah.
And then it had various degrees of whiteness, and then it got down to sort of yellowness, and then it got down to brownness.
Yeah.
And Māori were actually put at the top of the pile because they were kind of like seen as, you know, very remarkable. What? Look at their physique. They were amazing physiques, you know.
Mm.
And then down to the Hottentots at the very bottom, because they spoke a click language. So they were seen as just little better than orangutans.
Oh, my God.
And so this is the kind of mentality that settlers came to Aotearoa. They came with this mentality. Mm. And women were the chattels of their husband.
Yeah.
Women and children were owned by their husbands. So Māori women were independent. They had their own life. They didn't belong to their husbands. They belonged to their whānau.
Mm.
And so Māori women had incredible freedom, sexual freedom, all right across the board. Freedom to be freedom to participate in all sorts of decision making. And that was in contrast with white women, the position of white women.
Yeah.
So we squashed all that, and we squashed Māori women. And Māori women are, as we are seeing, are struggling and fighting against that. So we have the wahine toa that we see in the art world, we see it in the intellectual world with people like Tina Ngata. So that white system, that white thinking, it's still there. Mm. We still have people on the sidelines at sports games yelling out ape. you know, things like that to Aboriginal players and Māori players or Fijian players was the last incident that happened in Christchurch. And, you know, it's...
Also Christchurch, the rugby name is still the Crusaders, which is...
That is just so bad. It's so bad.
Yeah.
And also, I think they've stopped riding on the horses, have they? But that was also so bad. It was just icky, really icky. And they don't get it because they're so one-eyed. And, you know, I participated in the Springbok, anti-Springbok tour things, and rugby people within families, you know, there were divided families where people like myself were activists against the tour and other people in the family were just pro-rugby.
I know. It's annoying. Yeah. It's very frustrating. I want to touch on two things, you know, that you talked about there, but I want to touch on white supremacy very briefly and say, you know, the conceptualization that white supremacy is just the KKK or this very violent outward stream of that kind of ideology. It's not just that, it is a very subtle thing and it's hard to recognize when you're in the system. Also,
and that's what I talk about the banal.
The banality.
It is just an everyday thing that we're part of. It's a structure that we're part of, just like we are with capitalism. We're not out there going, oh yes, I want, you know, I really believe in capitalism.
Some people are, I'm not.
Usually the wealthy.
Yeah.
Or those who get they get sucked into beliefs like the trickle down effect. There is no trickle down effect.
No.
It's a myth, you know, but it's perpetrated. It's perpetrated by the government, or mining will create jobs. But no, it's a false economy.
And you mentioned earlier about Indigenous people often acting as a means to block exploitation of the environment, and that actually happened in the 1980s, where Māori sort of were a handbrake on neoliberalism, because of course there was the Land Corp, a big government holding of land, and the government wanted to privatise it, but Māori were like, hey, we have a claim to this under the treaty, and then it didn't all get sold. So, you know, they want to get rid of that ability for Māori to retain their resources, because if they do that, then we can just, I don't know, sell this country to the Americans, the Chinese, the Australians, who are the highest bidder, as you said.
And that's the thing that held things back, was that the Crown land was actually to be given back to Māori, and that was the thing that stopped people like the very rich people of Aotearoa getting their hands on the land.
Mm.
And now the government is trying to eradicate that with the Regulatory Standards Bill.
Yeah.
In terms of removing te tiriti from everything. And it is the tiriti, te tiriti, that holds on to the land, which it is there. It is Māori land. It belongs to Māori. It does not belong to the Crown.
Yeah.
So that's a very good point that you brought up.
I want to touch on one last thing about the book, and that is how you advocate for the elimination of cruelty and cruel habits from one's life. Now, is that the kind of thing where if you have maybe happier individuals in a society, you have a happier collective and a happier society that's more receptive to positive change and to kind of eliminating some of those settler culture tendencies?
One of the problems with settler culture, one of the problems with people's thinking is the focus on private bliss, that I want this helicopter pad in the middle of Hoon Bay or wherever it is, in the middle of some suburb. I want my helicopter pad. I don't care about the noise and the neighbours. I don't know if anyone's ever gone to Paihia in the Bay of Islands when the cruise ships are in. The helicopters come in every 20 minutes to the market. And it's horrible. Paihia is destroyed by the helicopters bringing these overweight people into markets, you know.
Yeah.
You can tell that I'm not a cruise ship person.
Yeah.
Getting back to what we were talking about.
Eliminating cruelty.
Yeah, cruelty is private bliss. Private bliss does not think about public good. Public good is public bliss. When we think about public good, we are doing things in consultation with the public. We are doing things for the public. It needs to be seen as the wider public, and therefore consultation. And that's why consultation is so important, that we are consulting with our public who are Māori, who are Indian, who are Chinese, who are Pākehā, you know, of English, various English, Irish, Scottish identities, Dutch identities. Why? And that's the other thing I bring up in my book is ethnic identity. Knowing oneself as an ethnicity and being able to, I know my ethnicities and that's my cultural heritage. That's what influences the food I eat, the way I act and think. And so for me, ethnicity is a really important identity thing that, that breaks down whiteness, that breaks down, oh, white people, we're the most superior people in the world. It breaks that down to our ethnic identity, and therefore we can nestle down in amongst other identities. And while we think about, if we keep thinking about whiteness, we're involved in cruelty, and a cruelty of thinking where we place our thinking as the best thinking, the central thinking, rather than forgetting that white people are only about 16% of the world's population, and we need to nestle down with our ethnicities and understand them. Understand, like you were talking about your background, and understand where we come from. And you see that a lot with Māori now, who recognise their Māori, their Māori identity, their Māori pakapapa, and they also recognise their English genealogies, their Scottish or Irish ancestries. A lot of them have got really interesting ancestries going back to Croatia. Especially up in Northland, where I come from, where I grew up. Cruelty is a, it's a dominant thinking, ideology.
And it's the process of cruelty, and involves othering, which is a whole other part of your book. But we're pretty out of time here on the one. I want to thank you for such a great chat, Dr. Elizabeth Cook. I really appreciate it, and I wish you all the best with the book.
Thank you very much, and much appreciated having a chat with you.
Of course. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Ka kite.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ka kite.
All right, folks. That was Dr. Elizabeth Cook. We're talking about her new book, Unsettled Bliss, which you can find at maryegan.co.nz, as well as aotearoabooks.co.nz. We're going to play Wave by Dr. Elizabeth Cook very shortly. It's 9:24. We'll have the Surf Report after that. Keep it real. See you shortly. Thank you for listening to a Radio 191 FM podcast. There's heaps more at r1.co.nz.